You're listening to Frank Prattle. My name is Zephyr Thrall. You're listening at 89.5 FM KPOO here in San Francisco. You're also listening to Art Radio, WPS1, PS1 Contemporary Art Center, a MoMA affiliate, at www.wps1.org. You might also be listening at the San Francisco Arts Commission Gallery at www.sfacgallery.org, and of course at frankprattle.com. Today it is my extra special pleasure to introduce two fabulous people who are going to be talking about the broad umbrella topic of public versus private, and maybe how that interfaces and connects with the topic of photography. And I have artist and professor J.D. Beltran. Hi.
Hi.
And another guest is Charles Geis, who is a art dealer and director and principal of Charles Geis Contemporary here in Berkeley and in East Bay. Hi.
Zephyry. Hi.
Maybe you guys can just tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do.
I'm an artist, and I also am a professor at the San Francisco Art Institute, where I teach in the new genres, critical studies, urban studies, and interdisciplinary studies programs. And my work, since its inception, has always concentrated on exploring various forms of portraiture.
And I'm an art dealer. I represent mainly photo-based artists who are doing work, narrative work, exploring issues of gender, race, ethnicity, and culture.
Sounds good. If you guys have any websites, maybe you can share them with the listening public?
For information on me, best thing to do is Google J.D. Beltran Artist. I don't have a website, but you can also look at the San Francisco Art Institute website as well.
Lovely. And I do have a website, charlesgeis.com, but it's probably easier just to Google me in case you can't spell my last name.
Okay. Lovely. So we're sitting in the San Francisco Arts Commission Gallery here in downtown San Francisco, across the street from City Hall. And J.D., you happen to have some photographs up today, both from yourself and, as chance may have it, or probably not chance, from your son, Sebastian, too.
Yeah, that's actually a really delightful surprise. Meg Schiffler, who is the director and the curator here at the Arts Commission Gallery, was curating a show, and she'd actually seen a body of my work during a studio visit, which is, the series is called Adventures, and they all happen to be pieces that feature my son in various activities that he does, and they can be something as mundane as being at the playground or at the beach, or he also loves Halloween and dresses up in these outrageous Halloween costumes, and so there are images of him in those various costumes. And when she curated this show, she was the theme of the show, the concept was, and you co-curated it well, as well, Zephyry, was artists who in their artwork use their day-to-day life experience and through it convey their vision of the world. And so, given that, it was, at least to Maya, luckily for me, perfect that I would have these images, photographs of my son. And when she asked me for images of them, I also said, well, you know, my Sebastian's been taking photographs himself. He has his own digital camera since he was two. And his first photograph actually was of the mayor of San Francisco when his preschool had a ribbon-cutting ceremony. So maybe I should send her some images.
Which I have to just comment on very quickly. It's a picture of Newsom with obviously like bending down to a low level, but you don't see, you know, much in the way of his body. But you see this tremendous politician grin. That's just this giant, full, straight teeth, white political grin that like is over the top. That's, you know, give me the baby's grin. You know, like I'll make this city a better place. Grin. It's fabulous.
There's a funny story because that picture was taken when we were attending the ceremony, and I was taking pictures. And he said, "Mommy, can I take pictures?" And I said, sure, and I showed him how to use the camera, and he's very quick, and the camera was pretty easy to use. And I said, are you going to take pictures of your friends? And he pointed to the mayor, who was in the middle of his speech at the podium. He says, I want to take a picture of him. And he walked up to the mayor right when he was in the middle of the speech, and, you know, so he's 2 feet away from him and looking up, and the mayor is, you know, 6 feet 5 or something, and Sebastian's about 2.5 feet tall, and was using the Zoom to try to zoom in on his face. And that's when Mayor Newsom bent down and he took the shot. And so that's how that shot was taken.
So that was in action.
Yes, that was in action. That was in the middle of a speech. And then after that, he started taking pictures of what he found interesting to him. And I sent a set of these pictures to Meg saying, well, if you want a picture of everyday life from the perspective of a 2 or 3 year old, because he took all of those pictures when he was 2 or 3, these are Sebastian's photos, and they ended up in this show. And I always find them really entertaining. It's one of the great joys in my life to pick up Sebastian's camera and to see what he's taken pictures of lately.
Yet another fabulous picture that that would perhaps some people might have, you know, controversy with, is that he took a picture of your butt going up the stairs, and it has been blown up and placed on the wall as well. How do you feel about that?
Well, to me, that was one of the most delightful things about his work, about Sebastian's artwork, is that, as Meg pointed out, no one would ever think of taking a picture of someone from that perspective unless that is your perspective of the world, that you're 2.5 feet tall and your view of your mother is always following her. And when you follow her up the stairs, you have the view of her butt. And I was, you know, I was enlightened. Oh, so that's how he sees me.
So Charles, maybe you can tell us a little bit about some of the artists that you're working with recently and shows that they have coming up.
Sure. Although it's hard to compare with JD's son's butt picture. Well, let's see. Again, I represent a number of artists, some who are fairly well known or emerging. Probably the two most well known would be Carrie Mae Weems and Hank Willis Thomas. And actually, both of them are having shows. Carrie's actually going to be in a show at MoMA that opens at the end of the month, end of February. And Hank is actually going to be in a show at the High Museum of Art in Atlanta. And he has a series called Unbranded, and it's an 80-piece series. And Jeff Grove, the curator at the High, is actually going to include the entire series in the show.
Not bad.
So, yeah, he's really excited, as you might imagine.
And Hank happens to also have been a former Bay Area artist here, no?
And he still considers himself to be a Bay Area artist. He goes back and forth between San Francisco and New York with various stops in between.
Sounds good. And so one of the things that I'd really like to delve into today is the nature of photography. And, you know, it's something that you often hear about, you often see. I mean, from people's snapshots to large-scale photography exhibitions to cell phones to all across the board. Like, people's computers now have little cameras that watch them and can take pictures of them and send them all over the world at the drop of a hat. And many people have talked about, you know, kind of digital versus film and what that means to the camera. But I want to dig a little bit deeper than that and find out what you guys actually think about the nature of photography. What draws you to photography, JD?
Well, certainly the immediacy that draws me, and even more so, even before digital photography was born, I was one of those photographers who would take every single shot. So I would not edit. So I had a very expensive photo addiction. So whenever I brought stuff to the Walgreens for development, it would be 10 or 12 rolls of one trip. So I was already taking in the digital style, except it was much more expensive because it was had to be developed. And now I find myself actually doing the opposite. I find one of the problems with digital photography is that because it has become so easy and so accessible, is that it's changed our way of dealing with the photograph. And right now, people rarely print their photographs in the same way they used to have 4x6s. They used to go on a trip, take 3 or 4 rolls of film, or 5 or 6.
Or 12.
Develop them, look at them, enjoy looking at them when they came back or through the 1-hour photo, And then they would stash them away, or they would have them in their hands, so they would put them in albums. And now I find most people I talk to, the majority of people, take the photographs. Usually when they see them is immediately after it happens, and then they almost, you know, unless they take the time to actually download them, which is a big commitment and investment of time, and organize them, for most people, that's, you know, the last time they see them. They're collecting hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of photographs. So people's relationship with photography has really changed in terms of, it used to represent a memory, and now it represents more an immediate gratification, an immediate experience of memory, and that line between something happening and recording it is now sort of this real permeable area that I find really fascinating, that people will immediately be thinking of taking a picture of something as it's happening rather than experiencing something and perhaps capturing it later.
Charles?
And if you think about photography and when it started, they were mainly used to send your image, say, to your family members. So you're traveling or you're separated by some distance and you would send them your image. You'd have a portrait made. And even, say, into the 50s and 60s, you would share your images, you would take those pictures, but you all remember the home movies and the slides. People would show their slides of their trips. Now that doesn't happen. Now you'd probably put up a website and you would share them that way. But for the most part, you're right, JD, you take the image, you look at it on your viewfinder, and 9 times out of 10, I do this too, you never look at it again.
What qualifies? Well, you know, first I'm going to ask a tech question, because I think some people, you know, this is a relevant question now. You know, we're in 2008. People can handle some tech answers, you know. you both take digital photos, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you use to look at those photographs on your computer or wherever? What program?
I use Windows Preview.
Oh, I'm a Mac head. I use Photoshop or Bridge.
Okay. And so what qualifies as a distinguishable photograph when you're going back through, you know, the 10,000 photos, you know, 258 million gigabytes, what have you? What stands out as a photograph when you're looking at all these little bits of data?
I know for me it's the same thing that, you know, the same qualifications that I would have had if I were using film. It has to be interesting. It has to have balance in terms of the image and you know, the negative and the positive space. All of that still comes into play, at least for me.
For me, it is that, but also a huge component of saving a photograph is what its function is, in the sense that for me, most of the photographs I save to be able to remember something, to recall, to virtually re-experience it. And sometimes I've been in situations where my camera didn't work or my battery was running out, so all I got was a really bad, blurry photograph of like somebody's elbow that no one would ever save. But if it was the only thing that sort of reminded me of that particular moment or that particular episode in my life and that I want to remember, I'd save it. So for me, it's more of a psychological and emotional function in terms of looking at whether the photograph fulfills, you know, reimagining that experience.
And how do you save it? I was thinking when I save an image, if I really like it, I'm going to use it, say, as wallpaper on my computer.
Right.
And so the last time before I switched to images of my dog, which seemed to be everywhere, I photographed the gates, and so, of course, I was in New York, and I was standing underneath the gates and the sky. You know, I photographed the sky, and for me, it was I really liked that image, and other people who saw it really liked that image, and so it became my wallpaper on my computer for 6-7 months. So it's for you, I was trying to remember that experience and being there and that cold weather in February several years ago.
Sounds good. Now, as far as artists using images now, both digital and non-digital, Charles, that you represent, Carrie Mae Weems has an interesting style, I think, that she definitely, you can tell that there have been digital processes in some of them, because there's, you know, obviously text overlaid on the image. Maybe you could talk a little bit about her process and what that means now to really kind of use those in combination, what she's aiming for.
No, she's actually kind of old school. She's still shooting film.
Okay.
Actually, all of my artists shoot film.
Really?
All of them, yeah. Huh. And so the text that you see in her images is either etched on glass or it's actually burned onto the image itself. So, or I should say dodged. But she does not really use digital. She uses a medium format camera. She often works alone. So she'll set up a camera on a tripod. For example, she was awarded the Rome Prize. So she was at the Academy in Rome for a year or several years ago. And, you know, she has various images that she took while she was in Italy and throughout Europe. And some of them I thought, well, okay, so you had an assistant. I mean, you would think that I would know this, right? And there's one image of her standing in the middle of a street, and there's traffic, and there are people standing off to the side. And I said, so who did you work with? And she said, no one. I put it on a tripod. I ran into place and snapped the picture. And if you could see this image, her dress is actually blowing perfectly to the side. I mean, it's at a perfect arc. And I thought, how could you possibly get that, you know, not working with someone? But again, most of her images, all of her images are on film.
Sounds good. And JD, yourself, do you shoot film or digital in that respect nowadays?
I shoot digital these days because I found that I am not trained as a photographer. I mean, I do know how to do darkroom processes, but I think for the imagery that I use, I tend to like to take a lot of film. I tend to take a lot of shots, and so I like to have the option of being able to do them in sort of a more medium format. So I try to use a very, very high resolution camera, digital camera, so I have that option. And I also really like to take advantage of Photoshop's capabilities of adjusting color, and I'm not as trained in color processing, you know, in the traditional method. So I probably 95% use digital.
And so, Charles, you had said, though, that you only show film photographers for the most part. Is that a conscious choice, or does that just happen to be how it shook out?
It's a conscious choice for me because my father was an amateur photographer, so I started actually in the darkroom as a child and taught darkroom basically black and white, but then eventually color. And after college, I actually worked in New York as a fashion photographer, and it was with film, well, slides then. And for me, there's still a difference between digital and film. Even though most artists are scanning their images, you can actually see the difference in the print, and. It's a minor difference, but I'm still waiting for that, you know, for that gap to be reached where digital film looks exactly, or digital image looks exactly like a film image.
Some people say that's never going to happen, that there will always be.
It may not.
I mean, maybe those are purists. I don't know.
And the difference is actually in the shape of the dots. So if you look at a digital print, you can see that the dots are, if you will, are square as opposed to round. And so it's on the edges. And most people hopefully are not pressing their noses against against a print, but. There's a difference in terms of color, in terms of clarity. It's almost hyper-real. And, the photography has gone back and forth between, should it be like painting? Should it be an actual image? What are we actually capturing? And I think that goes back to what JD was talking about in terms of memory. What do we really remember? what are we really saying?
Now, I was listening to National Public Radio the other day, and they had a This American Life on, Ira Glass being one of my favorites, and they had a show about memory. And the show was talking about how memory is connected to your mind, right? That your mind is continually making up memories. It's not like a file cabinet where you would go in and you would reach something and pick something out and then look at it again, but it's rather composite of many different things. And as far as developing memories immediately based off technology, right? That, like, I'm seeing something, and then it's being mediated quickly through a camera, and then I'm looking at it again. Do you think that actually is changing people's overall perspective of how life is lived? That something does not become real until you see it on a screen? Now, what do you guys think? Discuss.
You know, it's interesting. I listen to the radio a lot. I mean, that's my source of information. And often I will not know who someone looks like or not witness, say, Katrina. The first thing that I knew about Katrina was what I read online and heard on the radio. And so when I actually saw those images, it had quite a different impact for me. I know for me personally, seeing it changes my perspective. It may be that it's exactly what I expected to see. It may be that I had no idea of the scope, for example. Again, Katrina is a very good example. But in answer to your question, I think it really depends on, I don't want to say the generation, but that's probably a fairly good barometer. The younger the audience is, for example, I think for a young person, say a Gen Xer, possibly, yeah, if they don't see it, it's not real. But for someone, say, in their 60s or 70s or even older, who really their orientation to the world was what was most likely the radio, if you think about it, their perspective might be slightly different.
JD?
I think that this is a really interesting and complex subject because I think about it's evidenced in the way that my son experiences life and the fact that he knows how to use a camera, and I've sort of watched him and thought about how his way of remembering something is going to be through an image of it that's taken in the moment, which wasn't possible when I was growing up. And I was reading Susan Sontag's essays in About Photography, and she had this really interesting point where she talked about even before digital photography, obviously, because she was writing this, I think, in the 70s or 80s, that the photograph has this complicated role in terms of experience. Because if you think of the standard family photograph, everybody gets together in front of the Grand Canyon and poses in front of it, what does that represent in terms of when, a month later or 5 years later or 10 years later you're looking at that photograph? And one of her theories was that the photograph combines with the actual memory to mediate that experience. In the sense, and I think that happens even more with digital photography, is it's almost like the like what you were saying, we almost don't think it happened or don't necessarily believe it happened or don't experience it unless it is recorded, unless it is actually sort
unless
of,
you speak into the mic.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Unless it's recorded in some form. And I recently went on this trip to Europe with my partner, Scott, and one of the things that happened was that my battery ran out with my digital
terror.
Camera.
Terror.
I know, and it was really funny because his camera uses the same battery as mine, and so and he's also an avid photographer. But I decided one day when we were out and about, and we're in like Rome and Barcelona and Paris, that I wasn't going to care. That I was just going to use that day to not think about my obsession with recording it, and I was just going to try to remember that day. sort of almost as a conscious exercise in being anti-camera, anti-photography, anti-recording, and see what happened.
And?
Well, and it was interesting because I forgot. I mean, it's like I sort of have these vague memories of what we did that day. But in terms of sort of specifics, I at the end of the day, I couldn't really even remember. It was very interesting how reliant I have become that in terms of realizing, making that realization that at the end of the day when I flip through, that has become a substitute for my memory, which to me is very scary.
And it's interesting because even though I, again, the artists I represent don't use digital film, I use a digital camera because I consider my work to be just snapshots now. But I use them to jog my memory. So I only take, and maybe it's because I started with film, but I only take a couple shots in any given place. And you know, I might double check and make sure that it's clear, you know. But aside from that, I don't want 100 images of the Champs-Élysées, you know. I mean, I know what it looks like. I've been there enough that I only need to remember that one instance, or you know, that I'm trying to recall when I go through, say, the trip from last year.
Right. Now, you bring up an interesting term, Charles, and one that I think definitely plays into this conversation of public and versus private, and that is the world of snapshot. And when you talk about snapshot, it's definitely relegated, for the most part, I would say, you know, and feel free to jump in and contradict at any time you wish, but the snapshot is for the people. The photograph is definitely for the few. For the private, for the serious, for the professional, and some of that boundary has begun to be blurred in the last 30 years, I would say. And what are your feelings on that? I mean, obviously you just said I only take snapshots, so I mean maybe if you could explain a little bit about what that is.
A snapshot for me at least is not composed necessarily. It there may be someone walking into the frame, and so maybe their hand is blurred, or as JD, as you said, you get an elbow in your image, but you still want that. And hopefully, again, with a digital camera, I can take it again without the elbow. But you're right. For me, it's less serious. And what we've seen in photography is that the snapshot, yes, there are the, say, work by, say, like Thomas Struth, where it is so composed that it almost looks fake, or say someone like Cindy Sherman who will take an image and it really kind of does look like it could be a snapshot that someone took of her, and I know that's going back some years, but It feels like the snapshot is casual. It's less composed, if at all. You may tell people to stand together in a group, but someone may be smiling, someone may have their eyes closed, someone could be moving, etc. And that's okay because you're just attempting to capture that moment for your memories.
JD? Snapshot versus the pro photo.
I think for me, one of the most annoying things about being an artist is I can't take snapshots anymore. because of the nature of my work is every single shot has, might be something I might use in my work. So I find myself unable to, every once in a while, if something's happening very quickly, that if I don't press that trigger, I'm going to miss the picture. I can take something, but I just find that I become very sort of OCD about composing a shot, about making sure I get it right, and deleting all the ones that were wrong. And so, and that's by definition is not a snapshot. And then the other issue is that most of the photos that I take at the highest resolution of my high resolution camera, and so I. To me, it's ridiculous that you have a 3 megabyte snapshot. I mean, but I do them at that resolution because there's always a chance I might need to blow them up and use them in my work. So, and I do think that there's a difference, and it's not that I'm totally incapable of it, but I think it's sort of funny that because I come from this training where I'm trained whenever I look at something to actually compose it and to actually, you know, make it into a piece, that it makes it harder for me to be a little more relaxed about taking snapshots.
So level with us, just quickly. Or Charles, you want to jump in? What?
No, I was thinking that artists such as Hank or Wyatt Gallery or Jess Ingram, they all carry digital cameras. And so they carry digital cameras, but they like Wyatt, for example, shoots 4x5. Mm-hmm. So you know that he can't, he's not going to do a snapshot with his 4x5. But when he and Hank are traveling, they will pull out their digital cameras, and those are the ones that we generally see, like they'll send in an email. So there's a conscious decision that they make when they're going to shoot serious work or just a snapshot. Or Kambui, for example, Kambui Olujimi was in Australia, and so he sent back snapshots that he'd taken with his digital camera. But again, when he's serious, he uses film.
Now, to get back to JD, what you were talking about, and we'll talk also about, I'd really like to talk about Hank Willis Thomas a little bit later, is how many photographs do you think you take a day? Level with us for the real.
Yeah, there are some days I take none. I mean, for me, I always carry a digital camera, and I would say, like, if I'm on a trip, I probably would take 60 a day, which I did when I was traveling. But unless I actually see something that, you know, I find interesting or find myself in a situation that I think could potentially work as an art piece, and then I don't shoot. So I don't know. In terms of a day, I probably shoot an average of, if you were to average it out over a year, maybe like five a day. Not really that many.
Charles, yourself, how many do you take? I noticed that you have an iPhone, which has a camera on it.
Which I've never used.
Really?
No.
Congratulations. No. I'll write Mr. Jobs a letter today.
Yeah, it's funny. I was looking at it just today and realized, wow, I've never taken a photo with this and probably never will. Because
Can I take one with it?
Sure. It's because for me, it, you know, now that there are 10 megapixel digital cameras, why would I want to use a 2 megapixel camera in an iPhone? Yeah. So maybe I'll take one or two or three, but I don't intend to really use it much.
There's kind of two competing theories, I think, about photography, and probably about a million more, but you know, two that I'm kind of familiar with. And that is, one is the shotgun method that JD, maybe perhaps you practice a bit of, and then the other is the sniper method, you know, that one person goes out there and they shoot, you know, maybe 100 in a day. You know, they get every damn thing that has shadows on it, you know. And then somebody else, you know, maybe they go a week without taking a photograph, and then they pull out that silver bullet, and then they just hunt the big deer, you know. And what tends to be your artist styles that you shoot?
Snipers. Yeah, snipers for sure.
All right. And do you lean one way or the other as far as a...
You know, again, since the artists that I work with are, for all intents and purposes, doing narrative work, mm-hmm. They usually know what they're planning to photograph.
Right.
Jessica Ingram, for example, did a series that she calls a Civil Rights Memorial, where she went and photographed sites throughout the South where there had been, say, murders or some other type of incident that occurred during the Civil Rights period. And so, for the most part, she's taken one or two images of that particular site and has to plan them out because she wants, you know, she wants to create... I'll use the term, she wants to reinterpret that history. You know, for example, she has an image of Stone Mountain in Georgia outside of Atlanta. And I have to admit that I didn't know that Stone Mountain was at one time owned by the Ku Klux Klan, and that's where there were Klan rallies. And yes, there's a there's an edifice of the Confederacy, but I really didn't know the history before she had taken that image. And so what you see, if you can imagine this image of a gondola going up to the top of the mountain and various people looking at the face of the edifice, there's nothing, it could be a snapshot if it were a smaller image. And we actually did these as postcards. It looked like a travel image. But there's history behind it, and that's the type of work that I'm really interested in, artists who are reinterpreting history.
I'm definitely, I think, the sniper. Although if I'm in a particular mode, I will put my camera on snapshot mode to create a whole set of shots to be able to pick a good one. But to me, that's actually one of the most interesting phenomena in what we were talking about before, in terms of because of the capability of the digital camera. I mean, I don't even have a site on Flickr, but I've gone to Flickr sites and I've sort of seen their feeds, and you'll have somebody who has 10,000 photographs, and it's like, how could anybody even have the time to look or catalog at that many photographs? I mean, their relationship with the photography is obviously very, very different than mine. That for them, because the technology is there and they can push that trigger, they can take those tens of thousands of photographs. But the utility is, to me, is I don't see where that is. I mean,
I think you bring up an excellent point. Like when you go to a museum now, right, and you see an exhibit, there are some would argue that the world is so super saturated with photographs now that photographs are in a way losing their relevancy, because it's everywhere, it's all the time, it's on a billboard driving by on a bus as soon as you step out of the museum. Like, what separates it from that thing on the wall inside the museum? You know what I mean? Is it why photographs? I mean, with blogs with 20 million pictures on them that no one has the time to read or look at, are photographs still relevant?
Well, first of all, I'll say yes and no. No, they're not relevant in the sense that people are taking all of these, you know, irrelevant photographs or tens of thousands, but relevant absolutely in terms of, I think, the way that we live our lives on a day-to-day basis has been radically changed by the digital photograph because of surveillance, because of our awareness, because of our paranoia, because of how people relate themselves and convey themselves and are able to convey themselves through photography and the internet. And it has become so ubiquitous, and at the same time affected, because of that ubiquity, affected the way that it's used in our society, I think it's had a much deeper impact than I think people realize, and that we still are negotiating, and we won't realize until, you know, probably 10 or 15 or 20 years from now, in terms of how it's affected how people live their lives and how they express themselves.
Do you think it's the still image or the moving image? Because I'm thinking, say, of YouTube as opposed to Flickr. And, you know, a couple minutes ago I was thinking about when I was in Germany last year for Documenta, there were a couple of images that I didn't take, and I went to sites like Flickr so I could see some of the things that I had seen when I was there that I had not photographed. And so without those tens of thousands of images that everyone had put up from Documenta, I would have only had my memory to go by.
Right.
And mm-hmm. And so I actually wanted that. I wanted to see those. I actually went through them. More than I want to admit that I went through.
It reminds me of something. This is an exercise that perhaps maybe you guys would one day care to join me in. Have you ever tried going to a supermarket with a list of things that you're going to buy, right? There's a complete shopping list from vegetables to, you know, whatever you know, vegetarian, then maybe some pork chops, you know, maybe not, you know, your choice. But instead of shopping from the aisles, instead of shopping from what's on the shelves, you shop from other people's baskets. Have you ever tried this? And it takes a considerable longer amount of time to shop from other people's baskets, but I think it's similar to the point that you're making. Instead of taking those photographs for yourself, then you get really to shop from the world's baskets. as far as creating your own personal memories, you know?
So is this where I admit that I do that sometimes?
Do you dip in?
No. Oh, I see. Dip in. No. I thought you meant look at other people's baskets and think, oh, I need that.
Have you ever taken something out of someone else's basket, though?
No.
Not yet. But, I mean, would you say that that's similar, that it's that kind of public sharing of loud noises that happen, that public sharing of memories that is occurring now that was never possible before?
It's true, and it's they're not even yours.
No.
So, I mean, it's like appropriation, if you will, of someone else's memories and calling them your own.
Charles, you should know about this site that my partner Scott turned me on to, and it's run by Microsoft, but what it is it's a website, and I can't remember the actual address, that collects people's photographs of a particular like landmark. Let's say the Piazza San Marco in Venice, and you can download your photographs, and they have this amazing software that actually stitches together, changes the perspective, so you can virtually re-experience that space through this, you know, populace of photography that's been contributed by people all over the world who have gone to that space, stood in a particular spot, and taken a photograph. It is. It really is incredible. I mean, so, but I like the sort of democracy of that idea, but I also think it's really funny because when I've gone to that site, you realize that people will always stand in the same spot. You know, mm-hmm. of those photographs, mm-hmm. probably 70% of them are going to be from the same perspective with this full, you know, mm-hmm. center front view of the church.
Right, because there's this collective memory yeah. of what you should be seeing.
Right.
Right.
And so even if you're not thinking about it, you approach it from that same vantage point and you take the picture.
Right. And it's funny because that is a very specific perspective that we're all familiar with. And I was aware of it when I was traveling in all of these foreign countries. I would take a snapshot and I would think to myself, yuck, that just looks like such a tourist shot. because you know what a tourist mm-hmm. shot looks like because mm-hmm. it's got the vista, it's got the water and the boats.
Because it looks too good.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just so predictable.
Well, unfortunately, I think we've just about run out of time, but thank you both so very much.
Sure.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
You're listening to Frank Prattle. My name is Zephyr Thrall. You're listening at 89.5 FM here in San Francisco at KPOO, Poor People's Radio. Or you're also listening at Art Radio, WPS1, PS1 Contemporary Art Center, a MoMA affiliate at www.wps1.org. Or you might also be listening at the San Francisco Arts Commission Gallery at www.sfacgallery.org, and of course at frankprattle.com. My special guests today have been J.D. Beltran, an artist and professor at the San Francisco Art Institute. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Charles Geis, an art dealer and director and principal of Charles Geis Contemporary in Berkeley.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
Thank you.